W2TTT. Good evening, everybody. Sorry about that little delay. Just lower some background audio here. Sorry about that delay. We had a little malfunction with a fuse. I didn't realize I plugged something in yesterday to a 15-amp fuse. It needed a 20, so or 25. So, good evening. This is W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted every week on Thursday nights on 146.79, the repeater of the Bergen County FM Association, in this case, flying Franklin Lakes, New Jersey. We operate repeaters on a variety of frequencies, including 444-100, 443-100, and often they look for your support as part of being part of the community. Encourage membership in the Bergen County FM Association, which is in fact a separate club from the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. Okay, the net is open to all radio amateurs with privileges to operate on the 2-meter band in these United States. Pretty straightforward stuff. You come with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment, or none of the above. We encourage people to check in whether or not they have a question or a comment, and none of the above category. And we do that because very often your participation will inspire someone else to bring up a subject that you yourself may not have thought of, but your presence suggests might be good, even if you hadn't thought so. So we hope you will join us. Now let's see. We start getting on to the meat of the of the activity here, and that's pretty much done, as I said, by giving your call sign, your name, and then indicating whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. I think we can all handle that pretty straightforwardly. So with that in mind, why don't we start with the alpha calls? Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, nothing was heard. So, we move on to the Kilo station. Now, any Kilo station will do tonight because I'm just in a raucous mood. So, when I unkey, 50,000 Kilo stations will all call me at once. But we'll see if we can do that in an orderly manner. This is K2BAR.
K2BAR. KC2ORX, no questions, no comments, mobile heading home.
Evening, Robert, no problem, good check-in. Any other kilos?
KF2ID, Ben, I have a question.
Good evening, Ben, got your question posted. Next, any kilos?
2AMI, Tony, no questions, but one question.
Excellent. Okay, we have a Tony question. All right, any other kilos?
KO2 okay. Bennett, no question.
Okay, Bennett, very good. KO2 okay, acknowledged. Anybody else with a kilo?
K2 Zulu, Charlie, Dave, no question.
Hi, Dave, good evening to you. Any other kilos? All right, well, after 5 kilos without tromping on each other, that's pretty cool. Alrighty, let's go to the whiskey stations. Any whiskey stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above.
32JEK, Don, no questions.
Evening, Donald. Very good. All right, any other whiskey stations? Nothing heard. Any November station, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above.
This
name? No question at this point.
Okay, and that's okay. Very good, Jim. Good evening to you. All righty. Any other November stations? Okay, any call sign, any type, flavor, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above. Okay, one quick question before we proceed for Tony. Tony, is my background audio from the air conditioner noticeable and or objectionable?
Get him, Gordon. You're fine. You're clear. No noise.
Tony, have a very slight background noise, but it's not objectionable.
Okay, very good. And I've got now one, not two, but probably three topics tonight. So before we proceed with something, I'm going to just make a quick announcement. I was given over the weekend a fellow who was not a ham, but his father was. He can't even remember his father's call, which is tragic in my world, but he handed me a Klystron, and it's a Western Electric Klystron. It's a 445A, so it's got an octal socket. It's got this really funky heat sink. On the side of the tube, it's got a waveguide flange, WR10, I think it is, you know, roughly 10, 11 gigs, rectangular aperture, you know, feed. So it's kind of neat, and I'm really excited about it. So I'm not looking to use it, but I have decided that I'm probably going to make it one of my, you know, favorite paperweights. Got to have a favorite paperweight. This is a paperweight. This thing's the size of a baseball, or maybe a little smaller, like a kid's baseball. But it's really cool, and I'm going to bring it to the to an upcoming meeting of the club. I think it's kind of a great conversation piece. And this is when tubes were tubes. Not only did they glow, but they also, you know, did microwave. So anyway, all right. Before we go on, any other check-ins for the men? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, with nothing else heard, KF2ID, Ben, your question, K2BAR.
Okay, my question is, I don't like the amount of time it takes for my computer to start up, but that is, I don't mean the initial start up. I do mean the initial start. It seems to take a long time to start up, and I've been told... if you go into the startup menu and you start removing function by function and see what happens. So I have this question. Has anybody tried that, number one? It does seem like it takes, there's quite a few, I don't remember the exact number, but there were quite a few in that startup menu, and I don't understand exactly what they apply for. They apply to, most of them, you know, the headings of the startup functions that they have there are not directly decipherable, and the thought character is, well, they wiped everything off on that startup menu, what would happen then? I understand that it's the individual programs who get into position to start up early or quicker or whatever, so I don't really care. And when I go to an individual program, that takes slightly longer to read in. I don't know if anybody has any experience of trying to reduce the startup time by wiping out functions in the startup menus. KF2AD with K2BAR.
Well, there's no question that you can, start up your computer quicker by, lessening the tasks that you want to initialize. Now, if there are things you don't need, then by all means, take them out of your startup menu. No reason to have them there. But, you know, if you expect, for instance, a window, a browser window to open up, or you expect your email to automatically start, or you have access online, or AOL, whatever they call it, then it probably is worth your while to start those if that's what you normally do. It does not make sense to start them if you have no intention of actually going to start the application. So it's something to consider. So I would just make note of the applications you're taking out in case you want to add them back. Anybody else have any comments? KTBAR.
E2AMI.
Here, Tony.
It had problems with one of my computers taking a long time to start up and found that it didn't have adequate memory. I don't know how much memory is in Ben's computer, but if you go to the control panel and then to the systems and then look at hardware, I think it is, you will find not hardware. Usually when you go to the systems, you get a page that shows the processor and the processor speed and the memory. And I wonder how much memory he's got. I just recently bought 1 gigahertz of memory for $11.99 to increase the speed of my computer, and it starts up much faster. And I wonder if Ben has gone that direction at all. Maybe Ben should come back with a comment on that. Ben, do you know what speed or what computer memory you've got?
Yeah, I got 750 megabytes. It seems like it ought to be enough. I didn't try that, and I might try it. It doesn't much money. I was thinking eventually not buying a new computer not too distant future when the Windows 7000 comes out. I don't want to bother with the missing. I understand that Windows 7000 is supposed to be vastly improved. It should be out in a few months, so at that point I may buy it. But I don't know. I thought 750 megabytes ought to be enough. If you say, how far did you jump when you got to 1 gigahertz? From what did you jump to 1 gigahertz?
What I had was I had a gigahertz in there, and I went to 2 gigahertz. So I had an extra gigahertz in. But Ben, do you know what processor you've got? Now, I know, understand that XP takes a lot of memory to function, particularly if you downloaded any of the updates of XP. What processor, what operating system are you using, and what kind of processor speed are you running?
7 gigabytes, right?
Running XP, and it's I don't remember what the processor was offhand. Members are shooting and using just leaving me this moment. But it's the it's an AMD memory. I don't remember which one. The computer's about 5 or 6 years old. At the time that I bought it, was supposed to be a pretty hot processor at the time. The thing seems to have slowed down in time as more programs were put in. I want to get back to the original question. But like I say, I don't recognize necessarily. Suppose you take something out of the startup memory. That doesn't mean the program would start up. That means you have to go through a little extra effort maybe in starting it up. I mean, it would still show up on the desktop, right? If you click it, it would still pop up. It just may take a little bit longer. Am I correct about that, KF2ID?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So you only need to hit the start menu for things that you want automatically initialized when you reboot your computer. Tony?
agree with Gordon on that, and I'm sure there are more computer experts on frequency than me. I'm a self-taught computer expert and learning every day. I think if you ask people who are running XPs that a gigahertz would be the minimum you want to run with the with the XP program, because of the lower price of memory right now. And you know, there's a store over there in the Clifton area on Route 20 does sell computer parts, and you can pick up memory there as well as you can other places at a very decent price. And I definitely would try that, because the current price of memory is so reasonable. You're not going to change your processor, so leave that alone. But I'm running an 800 megahertz processor on one of my computers and running 2 gigahertz on it, and I think it's really fast. I don't have it fully loaded with all the programs that I used to use. So more programs needs more memory.
John, just real quick, have you run a side-by-side comparison with your Abacus?
No, my Abacus is slow.
Yeah, mine is the arthritis kicks in. My Abacus doesn't work as well either. Anyway, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist that. Alrighty, that's pretty good. Anybody else have any comments?
KO2, okay.
Then I go right ahead.
Okay, Ben, I'm not an expert either, but, you know, you can, after the computer starts up and, you know, you get your splash screen, whatever you want to consider your main screen, it's probably still doing stuff, and what you can do is put your cursor down in the right bottom band across the start screen, row at the bottom there. While your arrow's on anything, right-click and go up to a task manager. And you can see what's going on with the computer in terms of, I forget what it is. Is it, I'll just do it quickly here. Right-click, task manager. And you can go over to processes and performance, those two tabs. And you can see how much CPU out of 100% is being used at that time as it's still booting up, and how much memory is being used. And you can also look at the performance tab, and you can see how much of your actual physical memory is being used, and also your virtual memory. There's a certain amount of virtual memory that your system uses when it doesn't have enough physical memory. And if that's going up to the limit of what your overall memory capability is, then you know that you should be trying to add more memory in there. Also, if you have like spyware software and virus software, sometimes that is running when you first start up the computer and doing a bunch of checks, and that also takes extra time. So all those things could be you could take a look at too and see what's going on to see what level of performance your system is running at the moment. And that's it for me. KO2, okay.
KF2, I think. That sounds great. KF2, go back again. KO2, okay. Can you repeat what it is you do there when you start up? I'll make it exactly what the steps were again.
Okay, Ben. When you get your main screen, when that first comes up, you know, and you see all your programs being filled in, and you see your start menu at the bottom, your start button at the bottom, just move your cursor over to the right, to the middle of this, you know, blue line that's there, while there's no open tabs or anything. Just right-click on any open space, and you'll see a little menu pop up, and you can left-click on Task Manager. That's the easiest way to get to the Task Manager. And then when you're in the Task Manager, it'll pop up a table and with different tabs, and you can click on Applications. It'll show you what applications are running. You click on the Processes tab, and there it offers you the option of looking at either CPU utilization, which is how hard your CPU is working at that time, you know, out of 100%, and also memory. The next tab is performance, and there you can see how much memory is being used out of the memory that you have. And, you know, you could be hitting the upper limit, and it gives you a bar chart there, and it shows you a graph of out of 100% your CPU is being used, and you know, what level of memory is being used. And if it's more than you, well, not more than you have, but if it's near the peak of what you have, you're stretching your memory that you have, and you should be getting more maybe. Again, back to net, KO2, okay.
Try it then.
Okay, thanks. That sounds good. I'll try that next time. All right. I gotta just have to think of a second question. So I don't know if you want to do that or take Tony's first.
We'll take Tony's first. Go ahead, Tony.
This is K2AMI, and I just kind of it's sort of a question, and I think I know the answer, but I need some reinforcement. For the fox hunt coming up in 10 days or so on Sunday, the May 18th, 17th, I built a Moxon antenna over the weekend, and I find that, of course, the Moxon antenna has the characteristic of the rear end of the Moxon antenna, that is, the area behind the reflector. I think that the Moxon antenna might be considered to have a driven element and a reflector in front, or a reflector in back. Well, it's hard to tell. Anyway, the area that works best is that we aim the rear end of the antenna, the area away from the driven element, at this suspected signal source. Is a very sharp null, but it's so sharp that you can miss it easily by moving your antenna around, and if your estimator needle does not follow quickly, you'll lose that point. Now, the antenna I built was specified as a vertical Moxon antenna, and they showed a radiation pattern of the Moxon antenna, but it's the vertical waveform. Let me just drop it for a second. It looks like a heart. If you can visualize that there is a heart now laying on its side, with the top of the heart being the null, and the front of the heart being the forward direction. It's got a very wide beam width in the front, but a very sharp null in the back. Now, if I turn the Moxon antenna by 90 degrees, and put it in the horizontal position, what does the radiation pattern look like? Can you visualize what I'm asking, Gordon?
Yeah. It's going to rotate 90 degrees over on its side. I don't know what the... I mean, you only have the, what I call the azimuth, you know, if you will, the top view of the antenna radiation pattern shown, but it's vertically oriented. Do you have one that shows what the vertical pattern is in as originally designed?
They only show the one radiation pattern from the antenna, and again, the whole article is centered around a vertical Moxon, so I assume this is a vertical radiation pattern. And I know that if you take a dipole and you suspend it in space, it's pretty much a donut completely around the dipole. It's got radiation pattern, which would look like a donut with the antenna at the center of the donut. But I can't quite visualize what this pattern would look like if it were rotated.
I think you have to assume that, lacking other information, it's only a two-element antenna. So I think that bulge exists in three dimensions. So I would think that if you could look at that forward lobe as being, you know, dome-like, then I think that would probably give you most of what you're looking for. And then off the back, they're dome-like, just smaller domes, and they could be flaring, but it's only a two-element antenna, so I can't imagine it being anything other than a simple dome.
for each of those lobes, consistent with the with what you see in the one plane. I mean, it may not be exactly that, but it's probably close if you rotate it.
Morgan, there's no harm in using this in any direction that you find the maximum dip. If it works better in the horizontal or in the vertical dip, I will we'll do it that way. It's just I was trying to analyze it without seeing the actual results. Okay. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Before we go back to Ben, I just wanted to point out that once again, several of us have been asked to help with the Ride for Health, the bike ride at Bergen County Bicycle Tour that County Freeholders and the Bicycle Touring Club of New Jersey are running. This is not like the August event. This is the essentially the morning event. It goes from 7 a.m. to 12, and we're going to need some hams at Bergen Community College, which is the starting and ending point this year, about 6:15 in the morning, to dispatch them out to, you know, get coordinated and then dispatch them out to wherever they got to go. A couple of us are probably going to be there about 6, maybe a hair before, to get that really moving. So, if anyone's interested in volunteering for a bike tour, working one of the rest areas or some of the key intersections, that would be just super. Apparently, we did a really good job last year, and it was appreciated. And this is kind of like a warm-up exercise for us for the bigger all-day event in August. So, if there is interest, please contact me, w2tangotangotango@arrl.net. Alrighty, it's Sunday, June 7th. And for those of you who are involved in the Hudson Division Cabinet meeting, that's Saturday the 6th, which is another useful thing to note. So, before we go to more questions from Uncle Ben and such, I'd like to roll over to see if there's any other check-in. Please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Mr. Ben, your next question.
I sort of went on with my question. I was just looking at the Moxon antennas, and I just wondered if there was a multi-band antenna, and I just found it on the website. So I guess my question is, what is this, basically a vertical antenna or a horizontal antenna? I see both configurations here. Is it used both vertically and horizontal? Say it to ID.
Yes, it is, Ben. And that's the point. That's absolutely the point. So, cool. I'm glad we were able to answer that question. Any further follow-ups? Does anybody happen to know, conclusively, this goes back to Tony's question, if the antenna is sharper in the horizontal or vertical axis?
Kind of what I was looking for, and I haven't been able to prove that.
Yeah, well, given it's a two-element antenna, I'm going to assume that it's a somewhat, you know, narrow, you know, somewhat broad in the front kind of dome-like pattern. So be it. Alrighty. Well, I have a little adventure I went on the other day. First of all, a customer service happy story. Everybody's been familiar with these orange plastic, you know, dry boxes of various sizes that people have been building projects in. I know that fellow from the Salvation Army built some stuff. I built some stuff into these boxes. I use them for just general purpose utility use and all sorts of other things. They come in green. They come in other colors, too. But I want you to know I bought two larger cases, two larger of the ammo-type cases in orange. From MTM Case Guard, GARD. My invoice said that it was two big ones that were orange, two smaller ones that were orange. And my packing list said the same thing, and I opened the second box, and my gosh, one was orange and one was green. So, being ever polite but a little disappointed, I called the company and explained the situation. And they said, "Oh, sir, that's terrible. You know, you've ordered from us before, and you're using it for civic purposes, so, sir, you can keep the green box, and we're going to ship you another orange one. So I haven't seen it yet, but it's on the way, supposedly." And so that was a happy, unstressed, simple case of good customer service. So I'll put that out there for people. MTM Case, MTM-Case-Guard, G-A-R-D, .com. Good products from those folks. And excellent customer service. Which brings me to my next story. I have, across my operating desk, four dimmable 12-volt, what they call them low-voltage lamps, halogens, of the MR16 variety. It's a pin plug in the back, and the bulbs come with a, you know, reflector already in the assembly. And, you know, you replace the bulb, you replace the reflector. It's one of those kinds of things. And, you know, even though they're 35 watts, you know, they throw a ton of light, and more importantly, they also throw a ton of heat, even at 35 watts. So I did a little Google searching and found a company that sells MR16 LED replacements. And they're 4 or 5 watts. I found a company that was 5 watts, and they had 3 different lighting styles. They had the cool white, which is the brightest, and they had a soft, and then they had some sort of other thing called natural or something. So, bottom line is those others have a little less light output in order to get the quality up. But, you know, I've been using a halogen light, so, you know, when it comes to halogen, you know, halogen lights aren't giving you lovely lighting. They're giving you just boatloads of lighting. So it's not meant to be, easy. And that's why I have the dimmer here, too. In fact, the dimmer for the ham shack desk is by the desk and not by the door. So, anyway, for $30 or so, I bought, times two, I should say, I bought two replacement MR16 LED bulbs. And they should arrive any day now. And if the two in the middle work for me, then I'm going to buy two more and try them out all the way across on the whole operating desk, the whole 10.5-foot operating desk. So we'll see how that works. If it doesn't work, then I'm going to have two MR16 bulb LED types to use for portable operations. It'll only take about 1 amp load max. So I think it's a good trade-off. It's not bad. And a 5-watt LED array, cool white, gives about as much light as a 35-watt halogen. That's what's said. So we're going to find out. I'm going to be able to check them side by side. So there'll be a full report on this, and there's more to it in a moment. And that is that they'll generate less heat, which in my office is an issue because it's in a corner up in the attic. Summer comes, and you know, there's hot nights, and the little air conditioner in the background can't quite keep up with it. So we shall see. All right. Anybody have any questions about LED lighting where it might be headed, et cetera? I'm just kind of curious. This is K2BAR. Well, anyway, so that's the story. I think it'll be good for emergency lighting, for portable lighting. You know, get boatloads of lighting out of, you know, a half an amp is a good thing. It's a little tiny 60-degree flood, you know. I think it'll work just fine. It'll provide quite a bit of work area lighting in a very economical way. And, you know, we'll see. And now I might even mix and match and try those lesser output type bulbs. Which brings me to another question. Has anyone considered building up an LED array, you know, which would have to be cooled at some level, but an LED array to plug into an Edison socket, you know, with these recessed Edison sockets like you have a spotlight or something like that. I mean, I see the assemblies already ready to go, but they're just anemic outputs. I'm wondering if someone was interested in, you know, taking the time to really cobble together a sturdy array of LEDs, properly cooled and ventilated, etc., but also with maybe enhanced lighting, and also getting the right combination of lighting so that you have a good spectral mix. So, anybody have thoughts on LED lighting? God knows, I know we all have our opinions about fluorescence and incandescent. I'm just kind of curious. This is K2BAR.
K2MI, I think you want to direct your question to it's Noel, who shows up again. He was very involved with LED lighting. And obviously, you've noticed the taillights in all the new cars are red LED bulbs, or at least LED bulbs and red enclosures. So LED is finding a big market on taillights of cars. I haven't seen it yet in desk lighting, though.
Yep, absolutely. And I did notice that myself, and super fantastic. More and more car assemblies have those. I'm actually looking for those assemblies without the red lens, without the red LEDs. I like them in white because I think they have other uses as small, you know, task lighting arrays. In fact, I bought one. It's right here, and I have played with it, and it's kind of neat. The one I have here is, I'm trying to remember if this one is the red, or the white with the red lens. I can't remember. I'm trying to get the cover off, but it's here. But, too bad Noel is, unable to join us sometimes on Wednesday nights. Thursday nights, I should say. Yeah, the bulb I have in my assembly now is, looks like a marker light from, you know, I bought an auto parts store. But it's got two what appear to be white LEDs in an aperture. And so the reflector is kind of not fluid or consistent, but kind of faceted, but round facet. Kind of interesting. And then they pop a red lens over it to give you the red effect. So I was thinking that this would be good for area lighting in white. And so I'm going to, one of my tasks after the net is oddly enough to plug it into the power supply and see how, actually I can do it during the net, and see how much light I get out of the dang thing. So I think that might be a useful alternative as well for smaller things. But I think the 5 watters, Tony, which pull about 400 mils or so, have all the potential to give you not a huge amount of light, but a broader area of light of somewhat greater intensity than these little marker light kind of repurposed ideas. Over.
Very good. Well, obviously, LEDs and the hand flashlights have taken a big market, and some of them are 5-watt flashlights.
Yeah, they are, and I'm going to try it as we speak, actually. And the flashlight, the bulbs are red. The LEDs are red. I'm sorry, I thought they were white. So it's a very bright red light with a red lens and a silver kind of mottled a cover. So if you need to have some lighting that doesn't make you blind, and the red lighting is not bad, so
dread marker assemblies are okay. I personally prefer, you know, other colors, even a simple white, but, you know, I can probably live with red, and I will be testing that theory over the next couple of weeks. So we'll see. And one of my new acquisitions in the shack here, by the way, is a 80-ampere variable bench supply, lambda bench supply. I don't know how many volts it'll go up to. I think about 16 volts or so. The bottom line is that 13.8, it will be loafing along for the rest of its natural life. And one last thing, I realize that we have a very frugal audience here, but if anyone's interested in my 6 and 2 meter kilowatt amplifier, my Johnson Viking Thunderbolt 6 and 2 meter amplifier with a pair of 4CX250s, let me know. I'm looking to unfortunately let it live in someone else's ham shack because just I'm not going to be able to get it to run here, unfortunately. So, on that note, back to you, Tony, or anybody else on the subject of LED lighting or power supplies or whatever. This is K2BAR.
S2K.
And S2K?
Hey, yeah. One of the... I've stumbled in some of the truck stop that I've been in, on the trip back from Florida or whatever. Some of them have quite extensive supply of, you know, weird little accessory things to try to, you know, suck some more money out of the truckers other than just for fuel. And some of them have some interesting little, you know, weatherproof enclosures with white or red or other sometimes color fixtures that are all intended to run on, you know, nominally 12-volt battery. And some of them were not hideously expensive. So for some purposes, it might be a useful thing to try to buy. You know, they're oftentimes intended to, you know, go on the outside of the vehicle, so they have to be pretty tough and pretty seriously weather-resistant. But, you know, it's a possible source. You know, keep your eye open when you stop in for gas at one of these places. Some of the marine stuff is really, really neat, but oftentimes altogether too expensive. And, of course, when I go out to Dayton, I'll keep my eye open for interesting assemblies, not just the LEDs raw themselves. I'm hoping that more of that stuff will start to show up in a useful, finished form. NSUK.
Yeah, you and me both. I think that's an item that's worth, you know, being patient for, but on the other hand, we want it now. Anyway, so the good news is the 80-amp power supply, I will be able to run my entire ham shack from a single power supply, so including the lighting, which I fully intend to do, by the way, and have it loaf along in the process. So the other good news about that is I'll be able to, you know, pull one central power connection from the power supply, as well as the AC input to it, and greatly reduce the, you know, the EMP susceptibility from power leads. I mean, I try to do two things as a minimum when I have a, you know, lightning exercise going on in my neighborhood. One is pull all the antennas off, the radios, and number two, pull the power leads off. If I'm really feeling fortunate, I will pull every other lead off the radio, including the headphones, including the microphone, just to isolate the box as much as possible. If I actually have a third choice after antennas and power, I usually pull the computer cable or anything that's attached to computers or audio, external audio devices, etc. Active devices of one form or another. Anyway, by the way, Jim, in the background, you hear a 756 Pro 2 and a 756 Pro 3 on different five-element Yagis, both pointing to what do you call it, pointing toward a beacon in, over in eastern Pennsylvania. Works pretty well. Doing a little A-B comparison between these two radios. Interestingly enough, I think there's a different technology used in the screen of the Pro 2 than the Pro 3, because it just seems forever that the Pro 2 screen is either brighter or has, you know, it's got some difference in the technology, whatever it is. It just, you can't quite make it look like a Pro 3's display by adjusting contrast and brightness.
Well, I think part of the trick there is, as these things evolve, the availability of, you know, different screens, keeps changing. I know that drives us absolutely nuts at work. We've had companies discontinue products over and over again as they're forced into changing technology. And of course this whole change to Rojas has, greatly accelerated that. Over the last few years, the retirement of otherwise perfectly fine designs.
Yeah, Rojas, otherwise known as how to make a bunch of European bureaucrats feel important and pay off their buddies.
But we did run into one interesting beneficial side effect. One of the companies that makes receiver high-performance data receiver chips and transmitter chips, when they repackaged one of their dies in a newer Rojas-compatible package, they ended up having like a 50% increase in the equalization range, only because there was less inductance and capacitance in the package itself. Entirely accidental, did not involve any die change, but one of the few really happy stories that I've heard as a result of this change. NSUK.
Yeah, and of course, by definition, it had to be an accident. You know, a card-carrying member of the believer in the law of the unintended consequences. Such as life. Alrighty. That's pretty cool. But yeah, the displays are very cool. I mean, you have to position yourself such that, you know, your left, right, left, whatever is such that, you know, the Pro 3 display, you can look at an angle without it looking like it's frosted across the entire display. Whereas Pro 2, you have to look at it more square. Doesn't have a side angle viewing as tolerant as the Pro 3 display. But for an amazing number of functions, the radios are very similar. And I had to put my 46 Pro on top of my shelf right now just to make room for everything. Because I wanted to be able to do it side by side. Yeah. The good news is my antenna switching matrix, I was able to split the 6-meter antennas between the two radios and, find a source where both antennas have pretty much the same gain and signals are generally the same quality. I've done this one beacon that you hear in the background is one of those cases. Although, interestingly enough, whatever reason, the noise floor on the Pro 2 is much lower than the Pro 3, and I'm not sure exactly why that is, but it is. Anyway, NS2K is a KTBAR.
That's a surprising observation, but obviously they're both very good radios, but I'm surprised to hear the same. Say recovered audio, be interesting to see what the minimum usable signal is on the two and how they compare, under those sort of circumstances. But, very good, and certainly good luck, NS2K.
Well, you know, I don't have a calibrated signal generator. But what I realized was, another consequence of possibly moving this amplifier off my desk, is that I have a 150 meg scope, a 4-channel 150 meg scope, so conceivably what I could do is take my antenna analyzer and run it through an attenuator out to the scope, taking a peak-to-peak reading as to how strong a signal I have, do the calculation into, dBm, and then, see where that minimal discernible signal is. But I was thinking the closest thing I have to a tunable signal generator is that. The closest thing I have to an accurate measuring device is this 4-channel 150 meg Tektronix scope. So I think, I have the basis for doing that measurement.
Well, the cool thing is a lot of people do. If you have the MFJ antenna analyzer, a lot of us have a step attenuator that they'd use for fox hunting purposes. There you go. that and some wire and the appropriate adapters and stuff, it's kind of what you need.
Well, that's right. I don't know if I have an attenuator that's worth a damn anymore, but, I certainly have, I have a 30 dB attenuator of a big honking, bird attenuator. It's good about, 500 watts to 500 megs or so without any problem for forever, and lower power levels with higher frequencies for a while and such like that. If I just terminate the back of it, it becomes dummy load, but if I feed it through, it becomes 30 dB attenuator. So that would be a good start if I need to knock down a signal to something a little more manageable. But more importantly, once I do that, I can put it up on the scope and take a decent measurement. So I need to get somebody's calibrated step attenuator. I can certainly borrow it, check the calibration, assuming that whatever the scope set to is worth a damn, but no big deal.
Show up on Fox Sunday, you'll see a bunch of them. You just have to remember, don't transmit into the darn thing. The little portable ones won't like that very much at all.
Yeah, when I've done that before, I've made a point of taking off the microphone off the radio so that they can't have a problem. But anyway. By the way, the S-meter reading for the... The S-meter... it's signal right now. They're just above the noise, one is a few dB above S2, and so is on the other one, so kind of neat, actually. So, I've had to adjust the preamps accordingly to balance them out. But anyway... anybody else have any questions, comments, confusions, want to check in or do whatever? This is K2BAR.
SW2JEK, what frequency is that thing on?
It's 50.075. I'm listening to it with upper sideband on 74.44.
I'll try and listen for it, thanks.
Yeah, it's in Easton, and it's not continuous. It does take pauses. But, point your antenna west, you should be fine.
Gordon, did Bennett say you had success last week on 6 meters?
No, Bennett. Oh, Bennett. Well, Tony, you're just going to have to rat him out yourself.
Okay, I'm not too sure. It was like possibly Thursday, or Wednesday or Thursday night. He worked Brazil on 6 meters. Brazil on 6 meters.
Last week, yeah, I believe it. I believe it. I've been hearing some stuff, and it just not quite, coherent, not quite complete. And of course, very often in the evenings. I'm busy. It's kind of a strange part of the year where you want to be outside, but you don't want to miss the DX. So, I don't know. This is a tough question. One of the things that I'm going to try to do over the next day or two is see if I can just redouble check my ground and such like that, and really make a solid effort to do so in advance of the 6-meter sprint, which is this Saturday night from 7 to 11 p.m., by the way, guys.
Roger on that. I'm going to try. I'll be out of town most of the day, but hope I get back in time.
I think I can operate the sprint this year. My biggest question is going to be what happens when I point toward New England, because that's when my immediate next door neighbor gets upset that I'm coming through their television. And unfortunately, I'm coming through the television irrespective of what channel they're on. And the cable company was not too helpful, and they didn't want their flat screen TV pulled out of their its case, bookcase-y thing to, have anything attached or checked. So, the whatever the jumper cable was, it was, and it stayed there. And someone checked the connection going into the set-top box and the drop in the house, and that was pretty much the story. And so I'm kind of stuck, for lack of a better term. But, what I may do as a strategy is if I have the 2 6-meter beams on two different towers and rotators, I might leave one pointed toward New England and listen with it, try to call them off the other one that's not pointed directly, or shift it out, point it out toward Long Island. I point toward Long Island, I often can still illuminate enough in New England off a side lobe in the front to make the trip. So we'll try that. But if I point to the northeast, I am pointing essentially between their TV and their house drop. And New England's on the other side of their house drop for me, and there's no win for losing.
Okay. Anyway, Gordon, it's getting late. I got a sign. Is this net over yet?
That's a little unclear. We keep hearing new subjects and such. So again, just a reminder everybody that June 7th, Sunday, need some volunteers to run a bike tour, just in the morning till noon. And we are done at noon, let me tell you. So anybody else have any questions or comments or input for the net, please call K2BAR.
KS2ID, this 6-meter sprint, that's this Saturday, I believe, and what was the time again?
7 p.m. till 11 p.m. then.
Thank you. KS2ID, clear and QRT.
No problem. Anybody else?
KC2SDS, no questions or comments.
Hi, Rachel. Very good. SDS, we've added you in. Anybody else? Alrighty. Well, another successful net was had. I'm not going to disappear. I'm going to kind of hang out here. I'm actually going to put a radio on 50.125, and as well as the this beacon that I've been kind of monitoring, but we'll see how that goes. So if anyone has any questions or comments, I'll be kicking around if you want to talk some more. So I want to thank the Bergen County FM Association for the use of their repeaters. Again, we encourage people to support the club, and the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, the sponsor of this net, has other nets during the week, Monday on 28350, hosted by K2ZO, and it's on upper sideband, and open to, again, all amateurs with privileges in the 10-meter band. On Tuesday night, we have Kit Night, usually at Westwood High School in Washington Township, or at the Westwood Senior Center for weeks where we can't get the high school. Wednesdays, we have a chat net on 146.79, which is this repeater, and that's also at 9 o'clock. And then on Thursday night, we have a technical net, but as a lead-in,
on either 443 or 444-100, depending on which one's healthy that week. We have KF2ID with the 440 net, so don't be a stranger. So I want to thank everybody again. KC2RX, KF2ID, K2AMI, KO2OK, K2Zulu Charlie, W2JEK, NS2K, KC2SGF. This is W2TTT for K2BAR, the voice of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, sounding clear and returning the repeater to what passes for normal amateur radio use. And I'll be here if anyone wants to chat. W2TTT.